Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's conference. All lines will be open for today's call. We ask that you utilize your mute button when not speaking. Also, today's call is being recorded. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. This is Ashley Wilbon from NQF. I just wanted to welcome everyone to today's call. Glad that everyone was able to make it. Today's call is going to be focused on evaluating our very first resource use measure for this project. Exciting. And we're going to be talking about the health partners measure. So glad everyone could make it, and we're looking forward to getting into some discussion about the measures. Just a quick review of the agenda. We did have a little rearranging of the agenda from the last one we sent out. We just wanted to orient everyone to the plan for today. We're going to start out in just a second with Ann Hammersmith, who is our general counsel here at NQF. She's going to lead everyone through a roll call and give some guidance on your disclosure of interest. This is our first call reviewing measures, so we will have to have everyone go around and disclose any potential or real conflicts of interest. And like I said, she'll give more instruction around that and how you should go about doing that as we enter into reviewing these measures. We'll come back to the NQF staff. Sally and I will go over some of the goals and objectives for this call. That will be followed by a presentation from Sue Knudsen, who is at Health Partners. Health Partners only submitted one measure to the project, so while the other developers who submitted more than one measure presented during that general methods webinar last week, were you able to get an idea of how they their general methods applied across multiple measures? Since they only had one measure, we're giving them the opportunity to present during this webinar and introduce their measure and cue it up for you so you can begin your discussion following that. Like I said, after their discussion, we'll hand it over to Bruce and Doris, who are the co-chairs for the steering committee, and they will lead the committee through a discussion of the measures at that time, and we will open it up for public comment at the end of that and adjourn by 5 o'clock. So let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to hand it over to Ann Hammersmith to do our roll call and DOI.
Hi, everyone. This is Ann Hammersmith. As Ashley said, I'm going to lead you through the introductions and the conflict of interest disclosure, which we'll do at the same time. I want to remind you of a few things before we start. We certainly don't expect you to recount your CV to us. What we would like you to do is to mention anything that you disclosed that you feel is relevant to your service on this group and that your fellow committee members should know about. In particular, we ask that you disclose if you have had any involvement with measures that compete with those before you today, even if those measures are not under review in this project and have not been brought forward for endorsement. I also want to remind you that you sit as individuals on this committee. You don't represent the organization for which you work, nor do you represent the interests of any organization that may have nominated you to serve on the committee. What I will do is I will call your name. If I mispronounce it, please correct me. I ask that you tell us who you are with and then do the disclosure. I'm going to start with Doris Lotz.
Yes, I'm Doris Lotz. I'm with the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services as a Medicaid medical director, and I have nothing to disclose.
Okay, thank you. Bruce Steinwald.
I'm an independent consultant in health economics in Washington, D.C., and I have nothing to disclose.
Okay. Paul Barnett.
I am the director of the VA Health Economics Resource Center, and I have no competing interests.
Okay. Jack Bohan.
Yes, Jack Bohan, Wisconsin Collaborative for Healthcare Quality, nothing to disclose.
Okay. Jephtha Curtis. Is Jephtha Curtis on the phone? Okay. Curtis Elward. William Golden. Lisa Graybert.
American Hospital Association, and I don't have anything to disclose.
Okay, thank you. Ethan Holm. Ethan Holm on the phone. Ann Hendrick. Ann Hendrick. Thomas Lee. Thomas Lee on the phone. Jack Needleman. Jack Needleman. Mary Kay O'Neill.
Hi, I'm the Chief Medical Officer for Cigna in the Pacific Northwest. I did disclose on my form that I have a brother who is a health analyst for Group Health of the Pacific Northwest.
Okay, thank you. David Penson.
David Penson, Vanderbilt University Medical Center, nothing to disclose.
Okay, thank you. Doris Peter.
Hi, I'm Doris Peter. I disclosed on my form that in my work with Consumer Reports, we license information from some organizations that will probably submit measures like NCQA and other groups like that.
Okay, thank you. Steve Phillips. Steve Phillips. David Redfern.
This is David Redfern. I'm with WellPoint. I have nothing to disclose.
Okay, thank you. Jeffrey Rich. Jeffrey Rich.
Sorry, I was on mute. Yeah,
oh, okay.
This is Jeff Rich. I'm with the Mid-Atlantic Cardiothoracic Surgeons. I think I reported that I, former government employee, I ran the Medicare fee-for-service system for the Bush administration, but I really have no conflicts here.
Okay, thank you. William Rich.
No conflicts disclosed.
Okay, and who are you with, please?
The American Academy of Ophthalmology, Northern Virginia Ophthalmology Association.
Okay, thank you. Tom Rosenthal.
Tom Rosenthal, UCLA School of Medicine. I have no disclosures.
Okay, thank you. Barbara Rudolph.
Yes, the LeapFrog Group. We have three measures that were resource use measures, severity adjusted length of stay, and but I have no other disclosures.
Okay, thank you. Joseph Stefanski.
Yeah, I'm with the Michigan Health and Hospital Association. I have nothing to disclose.
Okay, thank you. James Weinstein. James Weinstein. Dolores Yanagihara.
Hi, I'm with the Integrated Healthcare Association in California, and we actually have a total cost of care measure that we're using. We worked with Thomson Reuters to develop it. We also, I also negotiate contracts with NCQA and work on resource use development with them for our program and also with Thomson Reuters.
Okay, thank you. Has anyone joined the call since we started the disclosures who hasn't disclosed?
And yeah, this is Ethan Holm from University of Texas Southwestern. I have nothing to disclose.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
Ann Hendrick, Ascension Health, nothing to disclose.
Okay. Anyone else? No one else? Okay. Do any of you have any questions of each other or anything you'd like to discuss regarding the disclosures? Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting.
Okay, everyone, we're going to just give a quick review as staff about a review of the goals of this call and what we hope to do. We realize that, you know, this process is new to a lot of you. Our phase one was very oriented around doing some thinking and broader thinking about resource use, and moving into phase two, it's a very specific process-oriented thinking, so we realize that transition is going to be a challenge, and, you know, trying to follow the process and the evaluation criteria and making sure that we're coming out with some ratings and rationale for the measures that we evaluate. So, and through this process, we're really looking forward to learning from any of the questions and things that come up in terms of process, as well as ways that we can carry forward to future meetings to help things go a little bit smoother. So we're not expecting at the end of this call that We come away with a recommendation from the steering committee on this measure. We realize that this is going to be the first time, and there's going to be some discussions that need to go on in order to get comfortable with the process and the measures themselves. So we'll have until the end of June, until after the steering committee in-person meeting, to actually make recommendations. So we are already planning on scheduling a subsequent conference call to discuss the NGENIX measure and potentially continue discussion of this measure depending on how far we get in this call. So really take this opportunity to ask questions of the developer. Staff is here to answer any process questions, but really just get comfortable with applying the criteria to the measures as you go through the process. Sally, would you like to add anything to that?
No. So as Ashley said, we do have the developers on the call, so they're going to present on the measure and have the opportunity to answer any questions, and we anticipate subsequent calls. We'll see how far we get through the four evaluation criteria today, and if we need to have a follow-up call or add it to the in-person meeting in June, we will do so.
So we just wanted to review. Hopefully everyone is pretty familiar with the criteria at this point. For those of you that were able to complete some of the evaluation of the measures up to this point, but again, just to revisit, there are four criteria of the measures: importance to measure and report, scientific acceptability of measure properties, usability, and feasibility. We do expect that most people will find that the measures are important. It's a very focused resource use is a pretty focused topic, and we realize that most of them you guys will deem important and anticipate that most of the discussion will lie within the scientific acceptability of measure properties and understanding the measure construction and so forth. So just keeping in mind those criteria as you move forward. So as I mentioned before, we're looking for a systematic criteria-based evaluation of the measures and thought process. We're going to start with the importance criteria and sequentially address the remaining criteria. So once you deem the measure to be important, you'll move on to scientific acceptability and discuss those sub-criteria onto usability and feasibility. We're really looking at the sub-criteria to delineate how the major overall criteria were met. So those sub-criteria are giving you clues as to how well the overall criteria has been met. So how do you know that the measure is important or scientifically acceptable, et cetera? And you'll notice also, for those of you that were able to get into the SurveyMonkey and do some evaluation, that the sub-criteria are all a degree of rather than all or nothing. So it's not that it's either yes or no, they met the criteria, but you're able to give a high, medium, low rating of how well they demonstrated that based on the information that was submitted. The importance and scientific acceptability criteria are yes or no. The overall criteria are yes or no, but the sub-criteria can be rated high, medium, low. The usability and feasibility criteria, the sub-criteria, and the overall criteria are rated high, medium, and low. So, and we'll get into more details as we go on, but just so you have an idea that, it's more of a bigger, broader picture as opposed to a black and white picture of whether or not they did or did not meet the criteria. So that said, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to Health Partners to begin. I'm going to bring up your slides in just a second. Is Sue Knutson there?
I am, Ashley. Thank you.
Hi. Okay. Give me 1 second to bring your slides up.
Okay.
And can everyone maybe give it a second for your screens to catch up in case, but everyone should be seeing a Health Partners orange slide on their screen and
Yep.
Okay. Sue, just let me know when you want me to move a slide for you. Before you start, though, does anyone have any questions from the steering committee about anything that Sally and I discussed before we move into the Health Partners presentation? Okay, great. Sue, take it away.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you very much to both Sally as well as Ashley, the NQF staff, as well as all of you on the steering committee for making this call for non-condition-specific cost and resource use measures. We here at Health Partners have over a decade of experience using this type of measurement to improve affordability in our community, and it is with our pleasure that we offer it for endorsement by NQF for broad use. So on this note, we want to start just by giving you a little bit of background on Health Partners so you understand the context in which we've created the measurement technique and also have used it in operations of both our medical group and our health plan to target opportunity areas to facilitate improvement. So next slide, please. Health Partners is a nonprofit, consumer-governed integrated delivery system and financing system based here in Minnesota. We operate a health plan with over about 1 million members, a care delivery system made up of our owned and operated Health Partners Medical Group with nearly 700 primary care and specialty physicians, as well as Regions Hospital, which is a level one trauma center and urban teaching center in St. Paul. In addition to our owned and operated delivery system, we partner with every physician group and hospital system in our network, which is not 100%, but very close to all of the providers in our state and in the bordering states. And we provide them with some level of measurement and reporting. It's our mission to improve the health of our members, patients, and the community. I also might add to this background that while our market is highly competitive, it's also collaborative. We operate in a transparency-enabled environment with a rich history of pooling data among payers and most recently using some direct data submission techniques from care delivery, electronic medical record systems to provide quality performance measure information. Our community is adopting standardized measures of patient experience to complement these clinical measures. And those clinical measures, many of them began with Health Partners as the measurement developer. We've put our algorithms and measurement specs out for adoption of community standard, culminating in them really becoming community property. So it's with that background that we offer our approach to cost and resource use measurement for more broad adoption. Next slide, please. This is what I'll cover today, and it sounds like it's in sync with your logistics. So what is the measurement? Why is it important? How does it work? And how is it used? Also, we had provided the micro website link for your reference. Next slide, please. So what is it more specifically? The total cost of care measure is a population-based and person-centered and primary care-focused measurement system. The approach quantifies the effectiveness of managing a population of patients by examining 100% of the care provided to them. It is illness burden adjusted, which is key to benchmarking and also key to understanding relative performance. And in our submission, we provided output of both reliability as well as validity testing, which I can field questions on during the Q&A with the assistance of a few of my technical staff that are here with me. In addition to that, and maybe more importantly, we've done what we call reality tested it. That is, we've currently got about 7% of our health plan commercial paid claims on contractual arrangements that are based on this methodology, and we share savings with providers based on improvement in affordability. And we use this as a basis to dialogue with providers and select areas of opportunity to improve the results. It's also probably worth noting in this section that we created this measurement in partnership not only with our own medical group but with others in our community, and we've used the collective input of these groups to hone the reporting capabilities to be practical and usable in operations. So finally, we see this measurement technique as a technique to balance the triple aim. As I had mentioned in the intro, quality and experience measures are somewhat abundant, but affordability measures, at least a standardized approach, is not. So to some degree as well, we know that every health plan is already measuring illness burden adjusted PMPMs. So transitioning it to an index performance with a resource use complement to us seems like a natural evolution. Next slide, please. So why is this important? Briefly, as Ashley had mentioned in the tee-up, we see the issues of affordability as paramount, as supported by several of the citations that we included in our application. I won't hit on them specifically, but we see affordability increasingly discussed, yet even in spite of that, there's few publicly available cost measurement approaches that exist. And so we also see this measurement approach as an opportunity to facilitate innovations both in payment reform, which I just mentioned, our approach to shared savings agreements, as well as in new innovations in operational models such as accountable care organizations and the advancement of those. So we also see a very unique feature of this as a well-rounded measurement approach to recognize population health efforts in prevention, as well as caring for those with chronic and acute needs. So it really wraps in the total population folks are for. And to that end, it also importantly addresses the right care at the right time and appropriately married with analyzing quality and experience measures. It can bear out issues of overuse as well. Next slide, please. So now on to how it works. As mentioned earlier, at its core, this is simply an illness burden-adjusted PMPM reported as an index. It does rely on attribution, which in our mind is ripe for standardization, but in the meantime can be customized and is flexible. We do use a majority of office visits to attribute, and we find these results from this attribution method sync up quite well with our medical group's view of their panel. And assigning meaningful and accurate peer group cohorts, such as a standard definition of primary care or how you're defining primary care, is also a key component. And then lastly, robust risk adjustment to capture the disease prevalence of a commercial population is also key. So what's unique about this measure is a couple of things that I had already pointed out. It is population-based. It is not a roll-up of chronic disease, nor is it a roll-up of episodic care. So it does value the attention to disease prevention of a population and appropriate resources provided to those with chronic disease and acute illness. At the same time, it does assure accountability for the volume of resources, which sometimes we here referred to as churn. Then total cost of care, lastly, is a function of price and resource use. And when we talk about resource use, we refer to the volume and the intensity of the services provided. And as a part of this measure, we do have a unique approach for subsetting resource use. Our approach puts 100% of care on a linear scale and values are relative and additive across sites of service. So we think this approach is superior to repricing to a standard fee schedule among the sectors of care because service choices are put on an even playing field from a resource use point of view. So I include a couple of examples here where, so what I'm saying here is we can have an E&M code in the professional realm relative to a chest pain admission, for example. And off the slide, but another example that makes a lot of sense to me sometimes is if I get an outpatient scan in the hospital, it's generally a higher cost than if I get it in a freestanding center, but it's essentially the same service with a price or cost differential, and it's we're not viewing that as a resource use differential, and this methodology accurately portrays that difference. And then lastly, we recommend displaying it as an index for benchmarking. Next slide, please. So here's basically how it works. The total cost index is a measure of the primary care provider's risk-adjusted cost effectiveness at managing a population. And it's essentially their risk-adjusted PMPM divided by that of the peer group. And likewise, the resource use index is a risk-adjusted measure of the frequency and intensity of all the healthcare services utilized in managing those patients. And also, likewise, it's the risk-adjusted resource use, PMPM, divided by that average of the peer group. Next slide, please. So now on to how it's used. In practice, we segment the health plan information by primary care group and provide index performance reports to all of our providers. We provide aggregate information and a suite of metrics broken down by condition and what we call service category. The next couple of slides after this one, I will go through a couple of examples of that information. But other practical uses include the use in payment methodologies like shared savings methodologies that I had referred to earlier, also benefit design and consumer transparency displays. And when we use cost of care measures in consumer transparency displays, we do couple that with quality and patient experience results. So other potential applications, though, could be rolling it and looking nationally among regions in the country, also looking at hospital referral regions or hospital service areas for comparisons. However, I note these as potential areas, but as it relates to our application, we have not yet tested these, and we'd also need to do a little work to create factors, as was recently called out in the JAMA article, around differences in propensity to diagnose. Next slide, please. So this is a bit of a detailed view, but let me walk you through. We wanted to give you a flavor of how we use this and how it's taken in action. So this is just sample data for illustration for you. So the top box in this view contains some high-level performance information over 3 years showing the number of our members attributed to this mocked-up provider as well as the metro average. So you see the membership over 2008, 2009, and 2010, their corresponding risk score or adjusted clinical grouping score over the same time period, and you see that roughly about the same. Their total cost index, which is below 1, and whereas the metropolitan average is at 1, and this provider is performing 3 points better than the average. And then our resource use index. And so for 2010, you see the TCI at 0.97. But consistently across all 3 years, the resource use a little higher than the metro average, with 2010 being at 1.05. So the next natural question might be, even though I'm performing well on the whole, are there still some areas where I could be improving? And we provide drill-down information using the same indices, so it's just really nested measurement to help guide that kind of discussion and improvement journey. So you can see in the next level is where we start to break out detail by service category. And I'll focus on inpatient just for brevity in the discussion. But inpatient in 2010, you can see we have a TCI of 1.04, and then if you look at the yellow box, you see that inpatient resource use at 1.10. And so that is quite a significant increase, so that's one thing to look at as to what might have changed over those time periods, but then also it's high in the current time period, so what might be driving there? And that's where we have listed in the pink box on the bottom, some high-cost utilization measures that significantly drive these overall categories. So from here, you can see that this provider in this example has an admission count index at 1.02, so that could be one driver. Additionally, inpatient surgeries are indexed at 1.08, which is meaning they have more admissions and more surgeries. I also might note that even though on the whole their outpatient TCI in the middle box looks good on the whole, ER services and outpatient high-tech radiology services are a part of that. And you can see in this example that high-tech radiology services delivered in the ER as well as outside of the ER are also potential drivers and areas for opportunity. So with that, next slide, please. This slide now shows how the data can further be summarized by chronic condition. So any risk adjustment technique, we understand, allows for roll-up of chronic conditions. And again, this method, we included this slide to show how the information and the method is drillable to chronic conditions, yet flexible enough to measure the entire population. So in this example, you can see by these chronic conditions, and we have all other conditions listed on the bottom of the list, that you can see the members associated, the total cost index associated with those conditions, and the corresponding resource use index. And you can see that resource use, when TCI is higher than 1.0 or higher than average, that resource use is a driver of that. And then also you can see that resource use continues to contribute even when the overall TCI is lower.
We're one slide behind, aren't we?
Slide 10. No, this is the right slide, at least one back. Thank you. So interpretation of the condition-specific information, I just say in condition or in conjunction with the quality results and results at a population level, can be easily portrayed in scatter plots. And so we find for those people in using a population-based methodology, just looking at the condition-specific information might not tell the whole picture. And so within this context, you have the opportunity to understand if people are enjoying better health outcomes with higher quality results and therefore able to address secondary health issues, and that might be leading to sometimes greater than average per-person resource use. And so this, we feel this nesting capability is essential to honing in where actual opportunities are and for it to be actionable at the provider level. And so we feel strongly that it's only within the context of this population measure that you can do that complete and accurate assessment of condition-based care. Next slide, please. So this is the last slide I had, and not to belabor it, but just wanted to finally show you our own Health Partners Medical Group has used this approach over the last several years to drive improvement. And as many of you may be aware, they are both award-winning with their care model design or care model process, as well as cost-effective with their results. And this list simply shows some of the areas of focus that have been directionally informed by using this type of measurement approach. So with that, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to provide this brief overview, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
This is Bruce Steinwald. I have two questions for you. You've submitted the two measures simultaneously, the TCI and the RUI, and it's probably the RUI that's most germane to what we've been doing. We're looking at resource use, not cost measures. Is it right to say, though, that the only difference between the two is that the total cost index factors in price variations across providers, whereas the resource use doesn't?
Correct.
Okay. Second question is, your resource use index relies on a total care relative resource values, and you've managed to construct those values so that they are additive across different sites of care using RVUs and using other measures developed by Medicare, and then adding in pharmacy. Can you tell us in 25 words or less or more if needed how you did that?
Right. So I will give it a shot, and I also, if you still have questions, I can rely on some of my technical team members who are here as well. We do rely on those sector-specific.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah. Is someone just put us on hold, maybe? Tom, are you there, operator? Is anyone else there? Bruce, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. Jeff Ridge.
Hi. I'm not sure what just happened. Tom, operator, are you there?
I think we lost our speaker.
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I'm here. This is Ashley from NQF. I'm not sure what just happened, but
somebody went on mute. It happened last week.
Oh, okay.
Went on hold. Yeah.
Hold.
Sorry
about
that. Please don't put us on hold.
Ashley, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
So in answer to the question about how we construct HPRRV, we do rely initially on the sector-specific relative value units. From there, we look at the build charges across those different sectors of care to build relativity. And then we do a final step to look at the paid amounts within sectors to make sure it's adjusted appropriately. And then we have some final quality checks for thresholds and output some like code level specific areas that might have counterintuitive results, you might say, and do some final checking there. So that is the very high level, and we can get into more detail if anyone is interested.
Well, but the result of it is you have all types of services and sites on the same scale. That is, you know, you've got a follow-up office visit performed in a physician's office on the same scale as an inpatient service on the same scale as a outpatient diagnostic test. Is that true?
Yes, that's right. And I would also add, I think we may have made note, but we are attempting to patent this, but not for commercial licensing, only to we are interested in sharing it for community property.
Other steering committee members, do you have questions?
This is David Redfern. The one question I think is interesting is that you used bill charges when you do this relativity. Does that bring in some distortions based on the sort of the way bill charges don't actually reflect the cost of the service?
Yeah, that's right. But what we found was that two things is that also the paid amounts, even among providers sometimes, and where things are loaded also is not as rational. And so we found that using the bill charges in that first step and then calibrating among the sectors of care was the best way to account for those confounders.
This is Mary Kay O'Neill on that same topic. Wondering if this varies by market with how much distortion bill charges will introduce into the analysis.
Hi, this is Ashley. Sorry to interrupt. I just want to bring us back before we kind of skip around a little bit. I have a feeling a lot of these questions are going to come up in our discussion of scientific acceptability, and in the spirit of trying to follow the process here, we're going to bring you guys back to importance and have Bruce and Doris kind of start the discussion from there. So please hold your thoughts, write them down if you need to. I realize Sue just presented and there's a lot of stuff right on the tips of your tongue, but we just want to make sure that we stay within process as much as possible. So I'm actually going to bring up the document that we send out to you guys as a guide for how to evaluate the measures based on the criteria. So I'm going to just put that up on the screen for the screen share and then hand it back over to Bruce and Doris to hopefully to guide you guys through the discussion of importance. And I'm sure we'll make it into scientific acceptability before we So I'll hand it over to you guys.
All right. So we save questions for when we're discussing the criteria. All right. Then let us start with importance. Would any steering committee members like to raise any issues related to importance or ask any questions of the developer?
Yeah, Bruce, this is Doris. I want to, before we kick off and kind of go line by line, 1A, 1B, et cetera, and try to capture some sort of straw vote and discussion. Since I got hung up on your comment about total cost index, and since we're not considering costs, but rather resources, or are we considering costs? Are we considering two measures here, or are we considering only one? That's a question for the NQF staff. How do we proceed with this? Are we doing this separately or as a group? Are we taking the cost out?
So this is Sally. That's a great question, Doris. I think the way that we've presented it, the costing method approach was left open to the measure developer. So a measure developer could potentially bring through a measure that applies actual or allowable charges, some kind of versus a standard price, or just straight utilization. To the extent that the steering committee thinks that these are two measures, I think we need to talk that through with the developers and see if they really consider them two measures, or is it different parts, different points in estimating the measure? I think that's a great, great question, whether it's one or two measures. But both potentially could come under this umbrella, both approaches.
Again, this is Doris. To me, they seem like two separate measures.
Okay.
Certainly proceed independently. They could be presented independently.
Well, this is Bruce. I mean, to be consistent with all that we have done before, it seems to me that it's the resource use index that we should be looking at.
Yeah, this is Jeff Rich. I agree completely.
Yeah, Bill Rich, agree.
This is Barb Rudolph. I actually disagree and see that the total cost of care is sort of where you get to, and that the resource use is something that you can drill down to as a way to understand the cost of care. But I'm not the measure developer, but the measure developer did give it the title Total Cost of Care and Resource Use Population-Based PMPM Index, which did not necessarily imply that they were to be separated.
Well, then let's hear from the measure developer.
Thank you. Yes, we agree they can certainly be used independently, but our intent and our strong feeling is they are better used in partnership with one another.
This is Mary Kay O'Neill, and this is an area of considerable importance to me because I think it's something that if the cost is reported, it has to be done very carefully to actually convey real information. On the other hand, there are aspects of cost that I think are important in information about how systems are working. For example, I'm not sure in a pure utilization measure, something like use of radiologic studies in different locations, the various economic impact of that could be captured without some cost component, you know, unless you're counting facility fee lines or something like that. So I guess I'm arguing both sides of the coin here, but I am very troubled about using charges based on experience in my market looking at that kind of data. It would be a very hard thing to interpret.
Yeah, this is Rich. I agree with Barbara. You know, I think we're going to have to add some questions here before we can get into your point. And that I didn't quite understand your methodology when you said you took charges and then somehow you adjusted for those charges on – it really wasn't clear to us, at least to me, in your presentation, what you meant. Otherwise, you have – how can this be used in different markets across different populations?
Bill, this is Sally. You're cutting in and out about every second or third word, unfortunately. I don't know if you're having reception challenges.
I can hear you fine, but you still, my voice still breaking up?
Yeah, it is.
I'll hang up and get on another line.
Okay.
As I understand it, the use of charges, though, would apply to both measures, right? The charges were used in order to create a single scale for every kind of utilization, and that would apply to both measures?
This is Sue. In response to that, we use the actual paid, so the allowable inclusive of member liability for the total cost measure. And on the resource use measure, perhaps I'll need to repeat this when the other gentleman is able to rejoin us.
I can actually hear you fine. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Very good. We use the build only to understand the relativity among the services. But we use a an adjustment factor for paid to build so that we get that relativity adjusted appropriately among sectors of care. So, for example, inpatient to outpatient professional services.
You use an adjustment that makes it, it sounded like you said it's then based on actual payments as opposed to charges.
Well, we want the paid adjustment to understand of the overall spend what proportion of it is in which sector of care. And that's why we do that across sector of care adjustment versus among the services, if you think of it that way.
So you're applying a different, you're applying some kind of adjustment factor because discounts are different in different types of care, inpatient, outpatient, professional?
I'm going to actually ask one of my colleagues, okay. Barry Kitching, to comment to see if he could say that maybe a little more clearly.
Thanks, Sue. I'll do my best. So what we end up doing to do this, we actually use the build amount to apply it to the lines or to the claims. So that's the most standard piece of information we have coming from the data. So we apply it to the lines using the bill amount. But when we go across the different components, like inpatient, outpatient, professional, we know that there's a different discount rate for each of those components. So we want to put it back in line into the real world. So the adjustment factor we do adjusts all those bills back down to the paid. So what would you, in essence, what your paid ratios would look like, your build ratios would not. So you want to make sure we reflect what's really going on in the real world. So the build amount is only used to apply it to the lines, but the paid adjustment factor gets it back to the real world across components.
Do you adjust the same adjustment factor for different types of service on some kind of community average, or is it specific to payer?
Well, we are one payer, so it's specific.
It's all internal for you?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
That makes it easier.
But we've also, we developed this methodology by use of a national database. We have weights calibrated nationally and regionally.
Calibrate on national and regional average discounts?
Yes. So it's not health partner specific. That's available.
Okay. I'm done.
Is the attributable population HMO patients or PPO patients or everybody?
For the attributed membership, we're looking at you're off the HPRRV question and you're on to attribution. I just want to clarify.
No, I'm sorry. I probably skipped ahead.
Oh. For attribution, we're attributing within our population as a health plan. And what we're saying is that can be scalable to different units of analysis.
So your health plan has HMO and PPO patients?
Yep, and it's essentially the same.
So what's the rule set for attributing it then to primary care physicians?
We look at the practicing specialty of the physician, and we look at claims history for evaluation and management codes, and we attribute patients to the clinic with the majority of visits.
Okay.
We still need to resolve the question that Doris raised. It sounds like health partners, you'd like us to evaluate these two measures as a combined measure. That you said that you think that they work together, and you'd be uncomfortable with us evaluating just the resource use measure. Is that true?
Well, certainly you could evaluate the resource use measure. We think to the comments made by a few of the previous individuals and the example that I gave in the presentation that is really where the more actionability of the measure comes out in play is that if you just had a resource use measure, like in the scan example that I gave in the presentation and one of the steering committee members had also referenced, because we value that from a resource point of view the same, we're really not giving credit, if you will, to the provider who's, from a stewardship point of view, using a more cost-effective venue for the service. And so that's where we think and the effectiveness of use measures in combination and its ability to roll down into details and roll up into the population is really where the strength of the tool and the approach is.
Well, you've given an example where you have a procedure that can be performed in a different setting, and it's likely that the cost will be higher in one setting than another. But what about price differences across different provider groups for, you know, hospital and other services? Don't those also influence the cost measure separate from the resource measure?
Yes, that's true. And in fact, operationally, you know, we have a price index as well, but we knew the call was not for the price index. And so, but that's the way, you know, this market has advanced to that level of discussion. And so, yes, that is very much in play.
So this is Jeff Rich. So I'm a cardiac surgeon, and I'm operating in every one of your localities. And are you looking at the resource utilization that I use versus everybody else uses within your network, regardless of geographic area? And then if you are, how do you adjust for the geographic variation in the competitiveness of the marketplace for cost? Because you are discounting services in some competitive markets where you have a strong competitor, and in others where you are a monopoly, you probably aren't discounting them very much. So the difference, are you looking at providers based on just a bucket of resource utilization? Do I do as many chest x-rays as the next guy does, you know, 500 miles away from me in Minnesota, or am I overutilizing that resource? And then how do you control for that resource based on the cost and the market competitiveness?
So I'll try to answer all of those, but if I miss anything, just let me know. And a couple of things. First of all, when we set up peer groups and do profiling for benefit design or product development, we do it within meaningful competition areas. So, for example, the displays that I provided were based on our metropolitan area, which is the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the surrounding suburbs. We would analyze the northern Minnesota Duluth area, for example, as a separate sort of peer group for consumers in that market area. But again, the flexibility of the tool helps one understand, like a purchaser, if you've got an employee base both in the Twin Cities as well as someone, an employee base in Duluth, it helps you also understand the relative differentials between those markets. So depending on the application and the user, it's got that scalability and flexibility. Did that hit on your all
there? Yeah, so, I mean, I like the idea of the purity of a resource utilization measure bucket. And so I like the idea that you would compare me to somebody else in northern Minnesota for delivery of the same set of services based on resource utilization. And that would be the number of CBCs and chest x-rays and tests that I order. And then my question to you is a paired measure then, you know, do you feel like you have a fair and balanced way of looking at the cost of those resources based on geography and cultural differences? Because I saw when I was at CMS, the cultural differences between coronary bypass grafting in Minnesota and in southern Florida were enormous. Because the number of consultants in southern Florida was three times the number of consultants in Minnesota on a per beneficiary basis. And so, you know, we sort of looked and scratched our heads and realized that there are true cultural differences in the way people deliver care in their community and their expectations both by patients and other providers. So how do you account for that?
Well, I think in the example you're providing, that would bear itself out in differences in resource use. If there's different practice patterns, that would come out in the resource use index. And then locally, if you've got the same provider, so just to take that example a step further, because I think I may have heard this in your initial question, is even in this market, we've got multiple hospitals, and we might have practices that do admitting to multiple hospitals, for example, but they might have different price points. And so there again, the resource use consumption might be somewhat consistent for any physician, you know, with a patient who's or a part of their panel that has surgeries. But what might be different among those different hospitals is the price they charge. And again, that would come out in this pairing of measures, as the total cost index might be a bit higher, but the resource use might be lower.
Thank you.
So this is Sally. I just want to interject a really quick process point. For this particular project, and it sounds like the conversation is going this way, we are accepting individual measures, but we are not accepting paired measures for evaluation. The project and the even the databases, the evaluation criteria are not necessarily set up for that. I don't want to stop the conversation, but we need to make a decision. It was a very astute question about whether this is one measure, whether these are two measures that the developer would like paired, which means it needs to need to rethink about how to manage that and when to manage that in an evaluation process.
Sally, it's Sue. I just want to clarify the measures are not dependent on one another.
Okay.
But they can be used independently.
Okay.
There is added value when they're used together.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
But, Sally, you just said that we're not accepting paired measures. So our choice here is one measure or two measures. If there are two measures, do we have to evaluate them separately?
Yes. They would have to be evaluated separately. Yeah, and in fact, even if they were paired, they would be evaluated separately and then at, you know, how they work together. So
Well, in that case, I go back to where I started, which was I think that we ought to be evaluating the resource use index. And if we decide we want to also evaluate the total cost index, then we can do that. But if we have to go through the process separately, I would prefer to go through the resource use one first, at least. Does any other member of the steering committee have a view?
Yeah, this is Doris. I would agree, and I was just waiting for a pause in the conversation to say in the hour that remains, or for me, a little over a half an hour before I have to jump off, I think that it would be good both to apply the process that folks learned about a week or so ago to just the resource measure right now. We can learn certainly about this resource measure while we've got the developer on the phone with us, but we can also kind of apply this relatively new process for folks over this conversation and see how that works. So if we want to modify how we approach all of the other measures going forward, we can learn something in this conversation and make it a more efficient and effective process after this conversation. So I'd like to strongly urge us to just charge forward with the resource use, you know, going 1A, 1B, and get as far along as we can and then see what we've learned at the end of the hour as far as how to structure the next couple of phone calls and ultimately our meeting in June.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the resource use measures are foundational here, and that's what we're all about, and then we can move on from there. But I think we'll have enough work just looking at resource use measures.
Yeah. So why don't then, without objection, why don't we go back to importance and start looking at the specific sub-criteria? Sally, is that what you would like us to do, to go sub-criterion one at a time?
That's right. So in this instance, because the non-condition measures have not gone to a technical advisory panel first, they go straight to the steering committee. We need the steering committee to focus on the sub-criteria to start with and, you know, keeping in mind what the goal of the overarching criteria. So for importance, is this area in which the measure is targeting something that's important to measure and hence worthwhile the resources that it would take to measure? So you'll see the sub-criteria, 1A, 1B, 1C on the left-hand side on the webinar, or if you're not have access to the webinar,
It's the evaluating resource use measures table that was sent out to all of you.
All right, then I would like to propose that the criterion 1A is met, because I think it's the or, I don't know about the national health goal priority, but either one I think is met by this kind of measure, this measure.
Agree.
This is Doris. I'll agree with a comment. I think it's a teaser. You know, I think it's hard to do anything with this measure without substantive follow up. I think it's it's your ticket to the dance, but it doesn't tell you much beyond that. So I agree that it does have measure, but I'm curious to see how our conversation unfolds from here on out, because as an isolated measure, it doesn't tell you much.
This is Barbara Duff. I think it does tell certainly the providers areas where there is perhaps overuse or underuse. I think it tells a lot. I disagree on that assessment, but I think it meets this first criteria, given the fact that there is grave concern about the 30% of overuse and waste in the marketplace.
I certainly agree with it. I mean, you know, we're holding off on the other criteria, so we're just looking at importance, and I would agree if you're at 1.15 and the other criteria have to be met as well, that's telling you something important.
I think it gives the kind of detail that allows a clinician or clinical entity to target their evaluation in that very specific area. So I think it's quite actionable on that level. I guess to see how it works on a larger rolled up level or a community basis is not as clear.
Okay, so Bruce, you want to move into 1B and 1C? I think some of what we're hearing is linked to feasibility, which is fantastic, and usability, but if we can try and think about the topical area that is being addressed by this measure, and whether it's examining an area where there seems to be problems and an opportunity for improvement. Again, this is not about whether or not the measure itself can demonstrate that, but whether or not it's examining an area in which we think there are problems.
With having said that, I'd propose that all of the sub-criteria, I believe, are met. Is there any disagreement?
No.
Then why don't we go on to number two?
So just quickly, and this is a process check, the rationale that all the criteria and importance have been met is because the measure is targeting an area where there's known to be variation, relevant service categories, and that the objective of measuring resources has been clearly described.
I believe the supporting information that the developer provided helps to demonstrate that. I mean, we all know that ourselves, but they also documented it, I think, satisfactorily.
Fantastic. Thank you. Now moving on to where there's going to be a lot of discussion, and we'll see how far we can get today, is the scientific acceptability. And you'll note that there's a lot more sub-criteria to work through, and also a lot more of the items and the specifications. That form that you had where in blue text is what the developer submitted is being mapped back. So you can see there's a lot of information to walk through, and I'm sure a lot of questions to be addressed.
A question on just sort of the content. I found the manual or the technical manual to be very complete in these areas, so I would hope that that's considered as well, because there were references all the way through and to match up with what was in the technical manual.
Are you referring to what was on available through the partner's website?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm having trouble getting some of those things downloaded. Some of the files are shown as being corrupted or just it won't download.
But the website is really very clear. You have a chance to go there. It's the link.
Well, I'm not quite so sure. The documents that I have downloaded and have read, I'm not sure the clarity. I'm still struggling with the clarity on this.
If there's a technical issue with some of the documents, we'd be happy to email them directly to anyone, size permitting. But it sounds like the website's working okay for some, but understand if that might have issues with some as well. I would just offer that, Sally. Thank you, Sue.
Two A in and of itself is pretty complicated, or at least it's pretty inclusive of a lot of things. Would anyone like to start a discussion about how well defined and precisely specified the measure is?
I think I have an understanding about the measure development within the context of health partners, and I understand from an earlier comment that they have checked it up at least in some regards against some regional and national numbers. But I think, whereas as somebody who's been a practicing clinician, I find that there's a lot of actionable data in this reporting at that level. I am struggling a little bit to understand how it could be transplanted to other systems and without a fair amount of work. I guess maybe that's a feasibility thing, but just how much of the measures definition and precision is based upon the internal systems that within health partners, and as opposed to what might be available in other systems. And then in terms of the definition of the measure, if we're looking at this as a population measure, I guess there's a category of data that I think is missing, which is if there are individuals ascribed on a population basis to a care system or a region or something like that, there was no way of looking at what it implies in terms of appropriate resource utilization, that you have people that aren't seen at all, or their whole encounter is purely a pharmacy claim. Seems to me that they're excluded, that from a population basis, there actually can be a risky group. So the non-utilizers haven't been defined in the data set for inclusion in an evaluation, and then the specificity of data that resides within their system being easy to obtain external to health partners.
May I comment on that?
Please.
You know, we have conducted the use of the measure denominated by users using attribution, but it could very easily be denominated with a population of total eligible, even recognizing some of those eligibles may only have pharmacy claims, as you say, or are not using any services. So that is flexible. Again, I think it's defining the application and use, and it's got a lot of flexibility, and then customizing those areas to meet that.
It was my understanding that the pharmacy was only excluded by Medicare or CMS in their calculations, but that you didn't exclude a case that was only had a pharmacy. Is that correct?
This is Chad on Sue's team. The comment on that. No, this is applied for a commercial population.
Right. I was just looking at the some of the methodology for the total cost TCRRVs, and there it said that you received some of the weights from CMS. Is that correct, or relative weights?
Right. That's for the weighting within the sector of care. So, for example, the DRG weights, we would have used the CMS weights.
Right.
For the calibration.
But my understanding with the attribution methodology is those people would not necessarily be attributed.
That's correct. Non-users would not be attributed, but if, depending again on the application, if you wanted to broaden the use to a total population versus those just using the system, that could certainly be done.
Okay.
That's where we said that attribution and some of these things are pretty standard, but can also be flexible to change.
Another question about attribution. So, I believe the materials say that the patient is either has selected a primary care physician and that physician then is attributed that patient's utilization, or a statistical measure is used it's the patient who's the doctor who has the most primary care visits with the patient. So the patient has to be a user of primary care services to be included, as I understand it. And then the attribution is at the individual doctor level, but the peer group appear to be large group comparisons. Have I got that right? So you're not actually comparing individual doctors' performance measures. You're comparing the groups that the doctor belongs to?
Yes, two things there. First of all, on the attribution, we are operating in what we refer to as an open access market. This market in the commercial realm is not accepting of patient assignment models. And so we have used a retrospective attribution. That said, you can, again, flexibly use a prospective attribution model as well. And so, for example, in public programs in this state, there is some products where prospective attribution is in place, and so that could work as well. But we have predominantly in this commercial evaluation used the retrospective model, and we are attributing at the group level. We have to look at the individual physician for the practicing specialty to make sure that we have an accurate definition of primary care when we're doing that attribution. But that said, we do not profile at the individual physician level, if you will. We profile at the group level.
All right, so then all of the physicians who are included have to be members of groups that are large enough to have at least 600 patients or something like that, right?
That's right. So this market is very much a group practice orientated kind of market, and so those are the thresholds that we have tested.
Would anyone like to either speak in favor or against stating that they've met criterion 2A1?
I would speak in favor of it. This is Barbara.
Okay.
This is Paul Barnett. One thing I was curious about is the decision to exclude these very high claims from the data. And is that it's a $100,000 claim, or is that are individuals with $100,000?
So it's not an exclusion, it's a truncation at the individual level.
But on
a truncation, yes. Yeah. So you're excluding all expenses above $100,000 per year per person.
Per person, correct.
And so how much is excluded?
Pardon me? How much was
How much of the total amount is excluded thereby? And, you know, why $100,000 and why not something else?
I think I would need to follow up for the precise number, but that's about 5 to 8%, maybe.
Dollars, yeah.
Would that apply to a pure resource use measurement or only when you're doing the total cost?
It would be both.
Okay.
We apply the truncation consistently throughout.
So any services that hit after they hit $100,000 worth of services are not counted as additional services?
Well, the claims are truncated consistently all the way through. And so you have still have the claims. We just truncate them using a factor that applies to all claims all the way through. So all the relativity still stays intact.
So you'd still be counting all the procedures and services?
That's correct.
Okay.
So they're in the resource measure but not in the cost measure? Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
They're in both at a
But the impact is really only on the cost side.
Well, but as I understand it, the example you gave, the $125,000 patients' resources are all scaled back. So if, tell me if this is right or wrong, that the patient had an MRI, he's actually considered as having 0.8 of an MRI?
That's correct. Both are scaled using the same truncation factor.
So it seems like you may not really be able to separate the two then, because if you need to actually figure out the total cost of care in dollars to apply the truncation, I mean, how would you do that without doing the total cost first?
Well, and that's a key to consistency throughout the methodology as well, because we're, you know, in order to risk adjust your resource use appropriately, too, you need truncation there as well. And so you really do need the capability of doing that method. And to the extent that, as I had mentioned, even if we're not saying these two measures, we're just evaluating resource use, you need full claims data to do this as well. And so by virtue of that, if you look at health plans or payers, as really the ones producing the information, they'll have that number there to be able to truncate the resource use number as well.
But it would require the plans or whoever is doing the calculation to have the actual payment amounts on the claims.
Yes.
And so why what was the rationale about excluding these very high-cost patients, or that portion of their claims above $100,000?
Well, we don't want to bring in the issue of accepting insurance risk, and then also we were going by the guidelines that were published and we referred to in the Society of Actuaries report, and it's a pretty consistent truncation limit that's applied through several methodologies. We're not unique in this.
Yeah, we actually apply, this is Dolores with IHA, we actually apply the same level to our total cost of care measure, so it's consistent with that too. I'm not sure if this comes here or in the maybe the feasibility or usability section, but I'm grappling with the same question that I think it was Mary Kay that asked, and how would you apply the TCRRVs to other regions? So if this is a standardized measure to be used across the country, how would that, you know, those values apply? I mean, would you just use the values as is, or would they need to be adjusted, and how would you do that adjustment? I'm really grappling with that.
So the table that we had provided as a part of the application is just simply at the code level. So any potential user can just, if you will, to oversimplify, kind of glue it on their file or merge it and match it up. And we created that. We have our own calibrated for our own use, but we also had access to an external database based on 20 million lives nationally, and so we created national and regional HPRR views for broader use.
So someone from another region could actually just take whatever regional one applied to them and use it as is.
Yes.
On that national database. Okay, great. Thank you.
I guess I'm beating a dead horse here, but on the TCRRVs, I mean, I don't know if there are, that if you look at different regions or different markets, if there are some markets for which there is, I mean, any of them can have an average, but some of them would have huge confidence intervals or spread as compared to others. And we did a study on hospitals internal to the state of Washington, and the bill charges are just, you know, every institution had a different strategy about how to set their charge master. And so that it was all over the map, and an average really wouldn't tell you much about any system's behavior. And I, maybe it's not as germane as I think it is, but I think it is a little bit problematic.
Well, if I've got this right, that didn't you use Medicare's values? And the key is to get every site and type of service on the same scale.
Mm-hmm.
But the relatives of inpatient hospital services, don't they come from Medicare's MSDRGs?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I think they're just doing the gaps from other sources, as I understand it.
Yeah, and then also doing that step to calibrate across those different sectors of care, inpatient, outpatient, professional, et cetera.
Right, because they're not all on the same scale, right?
Right.
And then and the pharmacy relative values, where would they come from?
This is Gary again. It is actually the build amount on the pharmacy. So we just create our, since there's no weights available, we just create them using the relativities of the build amount between the NDC codes. And again, we calibrate that back to the inpatient, outpatient, professional, pharmacy. So it's an average build per pill.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting because my understanding is that the build amount for generics is the wedge between the build and the actual cost to the payer is much bigger for generics because of the rebates. It's an interesting problem, maybe not soluble, because the rebates are all hidden from view.
Right.
This is Bruce. I guess also we should be looking at their risk adjustment methodology in this section as well. It's listed under the submission items. And I know there are some members that had some concerns, not so much about partners, but about these different methodologies that are commercially available. Would anyone like to make a make a statement either way? They're using the ACGs developed at Johns Hopkins and the latest version, I presume.
Yeah, we're using the latest version, 9.0, I believe.
Yeah, so that is an interesting question because we're just sort of, I mean, we don't really go into here what goes into building that, right? We're just sort of taking it off the shelf.
That's right. In our experience, we're looking for robust risk stuff given the comparative nature and use of this kind of measure. And so we need one that we can rely on to cover the disease prevalence of a commercial population and to really be accurate in terms of guiding improvement activities when it comes to care models and practices
And you relied heavily on the Society of Actuaries study that it sounded like they concluded that a number of these commercially available risk adjustment methodologies are satisfactory for most purposes.
That's correct. And just to share a little bit of history for our market, we pretty much have a market standard history using ACGs. I understand more recently there might be some different ones used. So we have, even our local Department of Human Services, for example, uses ACGs to risk adjust. And so that's one aspect that goes in to our use of the ACGs. But we did note that any of the risk adjusters associated with the Society of Actuaries study, you know, are comparable as it relates to their findings. Any ones that aren't on that, then we suggest that they be tested.
This is David Redfern. I agree completely. I mean, there's a bunch of these kind of things that are all subject basically to the same kind of limitations in terms of how much of the future cost variation they can account for, but they're all roughly equivalent. I don't think there's a lot to choose from between them, and the model they've chosen, I think, is okay.
This is Bruce. Should we discuss more in this category, or can we go on to reliability testing?
Yeah, so 2A1, this sub-criteria is about whether or not, as submitted, the measure is defined and precisely specified enough. So if, and as you noted, Bruce, a lot of the components are not applicable for this measure, as demonstrated in the submission, but if you feel that you've had enough discussion about this criteria, sub-criteria, which is about the specifications themselves, the next one, you're absolutely right, would be reliability testing information and results.
So I think we've lost our screen.
Yeah, can you, thank you. We weren't sure if the server disconnected on us for no apparent reason. We're not really sure. We'll follow up with the webinar folks, but we think we reconnected it, so the same side-by-side table should be back up. Are you still not seeing that?
I don't see it.
I had to log in again.
Yeah, you might have to refresh. I apologize. We don't even know what that was. We got some strange warning box saying that we were disconnected and being reconnected. So we weren't even sure if it was showing up on your end. Please refresh. We do still see now the names of all of you in, so it looks like it's just a matter of the presentation itself. If you are not able to get back in, we were on page 2 of the side-by-side table, looking at sub-criteria 2A1, which is about the precisely defined and specified specifications to allow for implementation. And then reliability starts at the bottom of page 2 and goes over onto page 3. Is the refresh working for folks?
Afraid not.
No.
Yes, sir. Go back out totally.
I did that, and it still didn't work.
Yeah, I did too.
Okay, yeah. We can try and contact with the webinar people, but I would hate to lose this time. If you have the email that Ashley sent last Thursday, I believe it was, the side-by-side table is located in that email.
Second of the, I think it's Wednesday, actually.
Wednesday. Thank you.
Yeah, so the question was 2A1, what were we?
Well, I'm not sure that we actually need to come to a collective judgment or not, because we don't have
right.
to. So I guess I was asking if members are satisfied to move on from that topic and talk about reliability.
Yes, I am.
Sure.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So reliability sub-criteria 2A2 and 2B1. Starting with 282.
You know, there was one thing on that last one I just wanted to clarify. So the one thing that the claims data were being used in terms of adjusting the relative values, I heard you say that it was to reconcile the inpatient schedule of relative values with the outpatient schedule of relative values. And was that based on claims or is that based on paid amount? Just want to make sure I understood that. It's claims, right? I mean, the billed amount, not the paid amount.
Well, it's using the billed among the different services, as Gary had explained, to get the relativity among all the line item detail. But then we use the paid amount to that paid to billed ratio to adjust amongst the different sectors of care.
I see. So, that was my question. So between sectors, that's based on paid amount.
Yes.
Okay, great, thanks.
So it didn't have anything to do with RVUs?
Mm.
So in other words, they know that they're spending, if they're spending 40% of their cost on outpatient care.
All right.
I'm sorry.
If they're spending 40% of their cost on outpatient care, then that outpatient care's relative values are going to have a sort of a 40%. Account for 40% of the resource.
That's correct.
Of resources in the end. I mean, that's what they're doing.
Correct.
That sounds right. Although they could, is that right, partners?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Would anyone like to speak to the issue of reliability?
I always like to make the statement, being in the insurance industry, that we are all assuming that administrative claims data is accurate.
We're making the same assumption about clinical data as well.
Yeah. I just, you know, I mean, when we're doing these analyses, it's just, you know, we might somehow have a caveat about how accurate these things are from a coding perspective. So, it's a concern that people can, if they get too precise on their reliance on what this is telling us, you can really become misled, I guess I would say.
But that's going to be true for everything we look at, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
As far as the reliability metric, it looks acceptable to me. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to measure reliability. But they were looking at sort of a bootstrapped pulls against actual, and there was high concurrence. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm no expert, but it looked reasonable.
And I guess the only other issue in terms of something in the nature of claims payment data is that people may or may not be aware of the time frame in terms of claims lag before you can do an evaluation on an entire, set of data that apply to particular cases. The hospital-based claims lags much longer than the professional, you know, pharmacy's instantaneous. There's a lot of different time frame things that need to be taken into account if you're looking at total care.
But they named only one time lag, 3 months, for all kinds of services, I think.
And maybe they're doing okay with that, but at least in my market, particularly if it's a complex case and it's a complex hospitalized case, that would not necessarily capture everything.
It wouldn't in Medicare, for sure.
Yeah. Is
is commercial, though, I think they have to bill by a certain point of time.
Yeah, this is Sue. You know, most of our claims, honestly, are coming in electronically, so we see them pretty quickly, but we allow for the 90-day standard because that's what contractually we allow for. But we do see them coming in. And as it relates to the comment about the higher cost inpatient stays, which might be associated with outliers, some of those may be hitting the truncation limit, too. So
yeah.
A few things come into play.
What about 2B1, which is also an element of reliability?
Well, I guess this has to do with capturing the population, and since this is a non-condition-specific measure, I do think that some thought needs to be put into looking at people that may be in a population or in a panel that are inappropriately low utilizers, because that represents an inappropriate use of resources and a risk.
Well, we know they've excluded people who had no primary care doctor mm-hmm. visits. So that's the population in particular you're thinking of.
Yeah, and I can see within their system that this may be getting them all the information they need to feedback to providers on how they're utilizing services. But if this measure is applied to a larger population, these other issues may become more significant. And also, as they apply to disparities, sometimes the disparity marker is underutilization. And I think that's coming up. So.
Good point. Anything else? Any other comments on the two validity subcriteria? I'm sorry, reliability subcriteria. And can we go on to validity testing? The data, the sample, the methods, the results of testing.
So the steering committee could ask it, amongst yourselves whether the data and sample used is adequate for validity testing, discuss the analytic approach, and then the findings themselves, and whether you think that the testing demonstrates that it is measured the areas that the measure set out as described to measure, and is distinguishing the different high and low cost of resource use.
I was satisfied, but I'd like to hear from people who have more technical expertise than I do.
Well, it seems like they have a good sample size. Well, they have the Twin Cities metro area, which is fairly large,
mm-hmm.
and 3 years of measures, 3 years of claims.
So you're very faint.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said I think the sample size looks good. It's the Twin Cities metro area, which is quite large, and 19 different providers and 200 and some clinic sites, so, and the membership over the 3 year period was anywhere from 268,000 to 300,303. So it seems to me that's certainly an adequate sample size. I guess the one question I would have is what's the total sample, what's the total population for partners?
Well, locally, we have about 700,000 members. That's within this marketplace area locally, but that is Medicaid and Medicare as well. And what we were looking at here was our commercial population who are attributed. Our non-user rate is around 9%.
So you saw, it looks like you had about 50% of the sample, or 50% of the population for commercial in your validity sample. So that looks great.
Does anyone want to comment on the correlations of the attached file that had the correlations review and that data, if it all looked acceptable? In particular, on page 4 of that, since we're talking about the RUI, it said the ACG risk adjusted RUI was minus 0.09. What does that mean overall?
Well, we're not hearing a negative remarks. I'm, as I said, generally satisfied, but because they're dealing with larger numbers than I think we're used to seeing, except in some of the Medicare studies. The correlations, I don't know how to evaluate them personally. What do other people think? It seems like there's, you know, over time a lot of stability here.
I don't have any expertise to dive into it any deeper. It looks, you know, as you said, stable.
All right, can we move on to 2B.3?
This is Sally. I just want to let you all know that we will be providing in the near future an in-depth summary of the testing findings. So when you retouch on the other measures, you can have an opportunity to have those. It'll be like a standardized assessment sheet to help make this conversation more robust as needed. And it'll be just focusing on testing approach and results.
Okay.
Okay.
And we're good.
Exclusions. And I think the excluding the subpopulation that has no primary care visits is an issue that was already raised and might not be much of an issue in the population actually studied, but for a broader scale, probably would be.
Hey, this is Ethan Hum. I agree that, that's a generalizability concern.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a way, you're excluding sort of never users, and they also excluded the super high users by truncating them out.
Right, and I guess the partners, maybe you could respond to this. You said you have a very group-oriented market, but I wonder if there are physicians who are excluded from analysis because they aren't members of groups within your market. And how do you address that problem, or do you even see that as a problem?
We have not seen that as a problem. And I might add, at least in our, we know from doing another benchmarking study just to understand how our own performance compares to national, regional, and local benchmarks with a consulting firm, that we have a relatively lower non-user rate, but I understood nationally that's probably more like 17% from that study, if that fact helps. I realize it's just one piece of information. So, and we see the bulk of our members do get attributed in this model to primary care. A smaller percent of those who are using see only a specialist, for example.
And then you excluded those over 64.
Yeah, this is a commercial model. Right now, we have not applied this to Medicare because we do not have the full suite of claims on our Medicare-covered population. And so we would be unable to do a full cost or resource use measure for those individuals.
So impinge on this being applicable to a Medicare population?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not necessarily, because several will have full access to all that information.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you just said.
I don't either.
So, for example, as a plan providing coverage, we do not have hospital claims associated with the bulk of our membership because we have a cost product and not a Medicare Advantage where we'd be at full risk for everything. So, therefore, we don't have those hospital claims. So I'd be unable to produce a full picture of resource use or total cost for the Medicare population.
No, I understand what you said, that you didn't include the Medicare people because you don't have the data.
Okay.
So my question is, but you built a model here that's not been tested on Medicare enrollees. So is that a limitation of the product, that it's never been tested on Medicare enrollees?
This is Sally. Let me just I'll give Sue a second to answer the question about limitation. But as a reminder, for NQF endorsement, when we would only endorse this measure for use in the commercial population. So if it's only been tested in a commercial population, or if it only been tested in a Medicaid population, then that's where it would be endorsed for. So that's something that is displayed to the users, what populations this measure has been tested and is ready for standardized use.
Thank you, Sally. This is Sue. Yes, exactly. That's what we've tested it on.
How small of a practice do you think that you can apply these measures to? The 600 patient criterion seems awfully large to me. Have you tried to apply these measures to small groups or even partnerships, individual practices?
You know, for what we've tested, it's been at the group level with 600. So we have not tested at the individual level with lower thresholds.
And how we came up with the 600 was looking at the available quality measures and patient experience measures and how those samples lined up. That's kind of what we came with the 600.
Okay, thank you.
It's 600 group or 600
per group.
This is Sally. We have about 10 minutes left. We want to give at least 5 minutes for the public to comment or provide input or ask questions. So I think we have time for one more question or thought, and then we'll move it into public comment and then bring it back and adjourn for today with some heads up on next steps to be expecting from NQF. So, Bruce, I think we have time for one more question, and then we'll ask the operator to open it up.
Well, then it appears that we're not going to get through scientific acceptability, and then so we won't be able to address feasibility and usability. But we will schedule another call for that?
That's correct. We will be.
Okay. Well, since we only have time for one more issue, I'd like any steering committee member to put on the table anything that they think is really important that we haven't discussed on scientific acceptability.
I guess the only other thing, and this may come up later, just have to do with, at some point in time, we should look at the peer group averaging as a benchmark, and how, you know, is that a good measure in all markets this might be attributed or be utilized in? I mean, within a commercial payment scheme and network, it may work out okay. I'm just wondering how broadly applicable these measures might be utilized and whether that's we'd have to do some serious thinking about how that would be used.
I agree. I think the fact that it's a very large group oriented measure, and most of the U.S. population is not served by large groups is a,
right.
is a factor that we need to consider.
Or that there's, I think, compared to the Twin Cities, a lot wider variation, not just in practice size, but in probably some degree of quality follow-up. That, you know, it might be a little different using an average in a market with more scatter, shall we say.
Well put. Any other steering committee member like to raise any issue before we turn it back to Sally and public comment?
This is Bill, Rich, and you know, I spent many hours going through the algorithms of different groupers in the past, and to be frank, there are some technical aspects that are way above my head, and I'm being very honest. I had difficulty contributing to different parts, and I think this is a learning process. It's our first one, but I'm being very frank in that some of the technical aspects were way beyond my ken.
You're not alone.
No.
Being honest.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
This is David. The one thing I would just comment is that the methodology is enormously complex.
I agree.
And that's a concern I had in terms of not so much usage for professionals, but public use. I think that complexity kind of gets in the way.
Okay. Sally, let's turn it back to you.
Okay. Thank you. We have a couple things that Ashley wants to touch base with all of you on, and then we're going to go straight to public comment.
Actually, well, let's go ahead and do public comment now, and then I'll wrap it up with our final step.
Tom, could you please open up the call for public comment questions or input at this time?
Yes, ma'am. All lines are now open.
Thank you. Any questions, input, or comments from the listeners on the phone? Okay. Well, Tom, we can go ahead and I don't know how you close the public comment portion of the conference call and then talk to the steering committee members.
So I think we've probably got about 5 or maybe 3 minutes left. So just wanted to wrap up the call and give you guys some follow-up information and next steps. So like I said at the beginning, we realized that we probably would not get through this entire measure, but I think it was probably to our advantage to just focus on one measure for this call. So in that spirit, we're going to send out another survey for you guys to fill out with your availability for the next couple of months. We'd like to get in at least one call before you come here for the in-person meeting. If we're able to get maybe one or two calls in there to discuss the measures, hopefully we'll get through them before you come here to D.C. If not, they'll go on the agenda for the in-person meeting along with some of the cardiovascular diabetes measures. So, like, this is a new process for us, as it is for you, so we're kind of taking things as they go, seeing how things go, and trying to accommodate everyone with meetings and calls to get the work done in the time frame we have allotted. So that said, I think even for the quality measures evaluations, I've heard that the committee made great strides today. So it was very impressive work in an hour and a half. So I'm very optimistic that we'll continue to get these measures evaluated and the discussions and questions out there to the surface. Absolutely. So on that note also, I would encourage everyone, I realize everyone didn't get a chance to complete the survey, the actual survey, Survey Monkey survey with the evaluation criteria in there. That link is still open. We were able to tally some of those results before the call, but we only had enough time to share them with the co-chair. So what we'll do is if you would still, you know, try to submit your evaluations, and we'll distribute those at various points in time and share with the group in an exported format so that you can see what people have, type of comments people have submitted. Particularly after this discussion, there may be some things that came up that jogged or, you know, brought up other thoughts about different parts of the measure. So we'll do that along with the availability survey. And
is that
sort of the final ranking that people are doing is through that SurveyMonkey, or is it?
Right now, we're just at the point where we're trying to bring out any discussion points for the measure. We will, at the very end of the process, when you guys feel like you've been through all the criteria and criteria to a point where you're ready to vote on the overall measure, that will be when we'll ask you to give us your final ratings.
I see. So these are just kind of tentative or preliminary.
Right. So we realize that as the discussion goes on, that people may be, you know, swayed in either, you know, one direction or the other, and as you learn more about the measure, your ratings may change over time. But it just helps us kind of share information with everyone and get an idea of where people's thought process is. So that said, we'll keep Health Partners and Ingenix in the loop as well, so they will be informed of any calls that we schedule so that they can be on to answer questions. I think it's always very helpful to have the developer on the call to answer those technical questions. So thank you, Sue, and your team for joining us today as well.
Thank you, Ashley. We appreciate the opportunity.
If no one has any more questions, we'll go ahead and close the call for today. And if you come up with anything, questions or comments on the calls or the measures or anything, feel free to email Sally and I, and we'll get back with you.
And so, what's the status of, I'm sorry to have missed the last one, I guess on the 20 week ago, anyway. And that was going to be recorded, and that latency doesn't seem to work still.
Yes, actually, we have posted the, I'm sorry if I was supposed to get back to you, we have posted the audio of that session. So for some reason, we've been having some issues with our webinar service. So we were able to get the audio along with the slides. I think if you can listen to the audio and open the slide presentations, you should be able to follow along. So I'll.
Well, if I go to that site, nothing. I don't get any audio.
It's a separate link actually that's posted on the website. It's an MP3. It's not actually the link I sent you was from the webinar service. But we also have an MP3 that's just strictly an audio file.
I see. And that's on the NQF site somewhere?
Yes. But I can send you the link to that. I'm making a note right now.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Goodbye.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.